We're learning Malachim Aleph. We are at the very end of Perek Ches, which we'll be finishing. We only have a couple of sentences, which we actually touched upon, on page 100, toward the very end of our packets. And thereafter, we'll, God willing, begin the next Perek. Perek Ches, which we've seen for many weeks as it's lengthy, has been discussing primarily the tefillah, the prayer of the king after the Beit HaMikdash finally was built, and all the different prayers that took place, and thereafterwards, the inauguration and the celebration, the party that took place because of the Beit HaMikdash, which was finally constructed. So that is where we're up to now in Pasuk Samach Hey, the very top of page 100. So during this time, because this was obviously such a tremendous thing to celebrate, finally, the Jewish people have a Beit HaMikdash, the central location in which they're able to serve Hashem. Therefore, certainly it's appropriate to have a celebration. From one side to the other side, everyone came together to serve with Nei Hashem. This was an opportunity to come together, to stand before Hashem, Elokeinu, Shivas Yomim, Shivas Yomim. The period was 7 days, and 7 days are Ba'asa Yom, which 7 plus 7 equals 14.
When was Hanukkah
provided?
Do we know what month?
Yes. If we look in Rashi, which we should see now, we'll discuss precisely when this took place. It took place basically around now, where we are right now, as we're close to Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, Sukkot. So if we look in Rashi, where it says, Shivas Yamin, Shel Chinuch, Rashi says, the 7 days of the inauguration, Chinuch also has to do with education. When we talk about educating ourselves, our children, we call Chinuch, because it's necessary before you begin the actual process of knowing, of doing, you have to know what to do. So that's what chinuch is. It's education to get to the point of knowing how to actually practice. So too, when it comes to the inauguration, it's called chinuch, because that's what's taking place. It's the very beginning process in order for us to be able to get the ball rolling, so we'll be able to serve Hashem properly. So now Rashi answers the question, when did this take place specifically? So Rashi says, Shivas Yomim Chag HaSukkot. It happened during the holiday of Sukkot. Nimsash, okay, so that's fine. Or the seven, it doesn't say 7 days. This Rashi actually says, Vishivas Yomim, which means it's almost as though to say it's the second 7 days was the days of Sukkot, which implies that the first seven took place before that. Seemingly 14 consecutive days.
Between Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur.
Right, that's right. And therefore, we have one slight problem, or maybe I shouldn't say slight, and that is there's a holiday which is coming up called Yom Kippur. And Yom Kippur, we know one of the things that we don't do is eat.
Celebrate.
We don't celebrate, which generally means with eating and drinking. But Rashi points out here that nimsu sha'achul v'shasu b'yom ha'kippurim, quoting the Gemara in Moed Ka'an, that in fact, on this occasion, they ate and drank even on Yom HaKippurim, which is an unbelievable thing. You would imagine that of all years, they'd be more careful than the year in which the Beit HaMikdash was built. They would certainly not eat and celebrate on Yom HaKippurim. So it's That's apparently so. Apparently they were allowed to do it, at least according to this interpretation. If we look
nobody told us to do it. If they wouldn't do it, we would be
afraid. Correct. The fact that all Klai Yisrael... Right, it's right, we wouldn't just all decide, all right, you know what, Yom Kippur, don't worry about it. Right, it would have to be someone of tremendous power and significance to be able to give us this leniency and loophole to eat on Yom HaKippurim.
Where does it say they ate?
And it's brought down in the Talmud. Rashi brings down this from the Gemara in Moed Katan. It says that it has to be, because if it, in fact it says it was for 14 days, we know the second half was on Sukkot, the second 7 days, therefore the 7 days going back was Yom Kippur, within those first 7 days, so there must be that they ate during on Yom Kippur. Apparently it means that it was 14 consecutive days. Some people may learn that it wasn't necessarily consecutive. Maybe, as we'll see in the Radak, this lengthy Radak, that perhaps they didn't eat on Yom Kippur. Maybe they took that one day as a break, but it was still 14 days, not including Yom Kippur. So if we look in the Radak, the lengthy Radak, in the second really wide line, that which is underlined, it says, V'af al-pi she'osu shimasimi Chanukah konem chagasukos. And the word Chanukah is the same idea, because Chanukah, the holiday, represents the rededication of the Chanukah Habayit, and therefore that's the reason why we call that holiday Chanukah, because that's really the celebration that we were able to get the second Beit HaMikdash. It came from the Syrian Greeks back, and therefore that's why it's called Chanukah. Same word as Chinuch, it's all the same. Kodem Chag HaSukkos. So this took place before Sukkot. The Yom HaKippur B'chlalam, as we already calculated, Yom Kippur is within those first 7 days. So the question is, how are they able to do that? The Efshar She'osa Hayom L'Ochu, is it possible to say that they, on that day, it must be that they L'Ochu, it must be they didn't eat. How can we possibly say that they would have eaten on Yom HaKippurim? Unfathomable. So therefore the Radak was entertaining the possibility that on Yom Kippur they certainly did not eat. Shari mitzvah l'sa'anos, the v'kari t'oichelbo. We know that it's a mitzvah to fast, and if a person does eat on Yom HaKippurim, of course if there's health issues that's another matter, but just to go out of your way to eat is something in which is against Torah law. V'af al pi she'omer ki chanukah samizbeach osu shivash yamim. Even though it does say clearly that the inauguration for the Beis HaMikdash and the altar occurred for 7 days, the Hachag Shemas Yomim, and then afterwards was 7 days of Sukkot, B'chol Yom Hayu Makrivim Zivchei Shlomim, it does say that during these 14 days, part of the ceremony was bringing sacrifices, more specifically a Shlomim, a peace offering. And we know one of the reasons why this offering is called Shlomim is because it brings peace to everyone. Problem when there's often fights is when I have something and you don't. Causes jealousy, animosity. Shlomim, everyone is able to partake. It goes, some of it's consumed on the Mizbeach. Kohanim eat it, as well as non-Kohanim. That's why it's called a Shlomim, because it's something which everyone has the ability to eat. That is what was brought during this time. Hakribu HaShlomim Gam Osa Hayom. It's understood, the Radak somehow understands, it must be, that as they were bringing these offerings, who says that they would not have brought this offering on Yom Kippur? They must have. The reality is you don't have to eat the meat right away, so what could you do instead? So you save it. It's Yom Kippur. So you bring the sacrifice on Yom Kippur, you don't eat the meat until after Yom Kippur is over. So that's how the Radak interprets it. It's not a contradiction. They could have brought the sacrifices. Doesn't mean you have to eat it the second after it's offered. So you wait. And therefore, that's how the Radak addresses. Unlike the Talmud or Rashi's interpretation, in fact, they did not eat on Yom Kippur. However, the Radak does feel obligated to bring down that not everyone agrees to this. Although Rabbi Seinu Zal Amru, our rabbis, blessed memory, teach us, Ki ochlu oso yom ha-kippurim. In fact, they did eat on Yom HaKippurim. Why? Because Lamdu Zen Mechanukas HaMishkan. We learn this not from the construction of the first temple, but rather from the Mishkan itself, this makeshift temple which was in the wilderness, in which was during the times of Moshe. So there was also a Chanukas HaMishkan. There was also an inauguration. And over there, they also brought offerings. U'mashom osu shlomim b'shabbos. It's understood, it's brought down, that part of the inauguration, they brought peace offerings. And even though most people don't realize this, when a person would be asked, what's the difference between Shabbos and Yom Kippur? Which one has the greater degree of holiness as far as if one would violate it and desecrate it, which one is a greater punishment?
Yom Kippur, I think, takes precedence in the Shabbos.
Well, that it does, as we certainly when it comes to, let's say, eating. This year, as in a couple weeks, Yom Kippur is on Shabbos. We obviously we don't push off Yom Kippur. We fast, even though it's on Shabbos. But interestingly enough, we'll notice something that there, when it comes to the different people that are called up to the Torah, we have different amounts of people depending on the day. On a regular weekday, we call three people. On Rosh Chodesh, as well on Chol Hamoed, we call for an additional fourth person because we have something extra. We have a Musaf prayer. On Yom Tov, because we don't do work, we have a fifth honor. On Yom Kippur, there's six. Then on Shabbos, it's seven. So on some level, certainly when it comes to the punishment that the Torah actually says, the punishment of one who violates Shabbos is greater. And the punishment of violating Shabbos, again, of course, you have to understand what these words mean, but the punishment literally is skila, which is a death penalty by the Jewish court system. Okay, of course, which doesn't take place now, but this is something which is brought down by our sages. Now, on Shabbos, the punishment, one who would desecrate it, the punishment is skila, which is not only one of the four death penalties, it happens to be the most severe of the death penalties. It's a very, very serious punishment. Okay. Again, what does that mean? It doesn't mean that if you see someone who is not Sabbath observant, that, you know, obviously we have to be sensitive, but we don't understand exactly that person's situation to be able to judge them. God forbid, we have enough on our plates, certainly this time of year, but to judge others. We have enough to focus on ourselves. But nonetheless, the Radak does point out that they violated, so to speak, Shabbos by bringing these offerings, even though the punishment is skila, is stoning, which is an interesting thing. There are certain laws on Shabbos you're not allowed to do. You're not allowed to slaughter animals, you're not allowed to do certain things. But in the Beit HaMikdash, on Shabbos, there were, of course, offerings or sacrifices or slaughtering going on. There was a lot of different things that were that are allowed within the walls of the Beit HaMikdash that outside of the Beit HaMikdash you certainly cannot do, which in itself is an amazing thing to think about. So obviously when it comes to the Beit HaMikdash, for whatever reason, certain things are elevated above the laws that take place outside of the Beit HaMikdash. And we can kind of understand that on a simplistic level, that outside of the Beit HaMikdash, we need more mitzvos to be able to be reminded of spirituality and godliness. When one is in the Beit HaMikdash, so, you know, you're already have this spiritual connection. So, continuing the words of the Radak, when it came to the inauguration of the Mizbeach, in the times of the Mishkan, in the wilderness, they were able to bring these offerings even on Shabbos, even though the punishment of slaughtering and things of that nature is punishment, is a very severe punishment. So, Yom HaKippurim, Isser Kares, the person who would violate and desecrate Yom HaKippurim, it is not a punishment. The punishment is not by the Jewish courts. It's Kares, something which is a spiritual punishment. So a person can violate Yom HaKippurim, but nonetheless, they will not be punished according to any standards by the Jewish courts, by the Beis Din. So therefore, the standards of Yom Kippur are lower, if you will, or not as severe or serious as one who violates the Shabbos. So Kol Shekein. So all the more so. This is understanding through the means of an a fortiori Kal V'chomer that certainly they would be allowed to bring and even eat on Yom Kippur. If the laws of Shabbos were uplifted in the wilderness for the Beit HaMikdash or the Mishkan, then certainly the laws of Yom Kippur could be uplifted for the sake of the first base of Mikdash. And this the last line over here, the Chanukas HaMishkan Shabbos Hoya B'chlal Shneim Aser Yom Ki Ritzufim Hoyu. We know that it had to be in Ritzufim, which is consecutive. It's not that you can just break up one day. The celebrations that are taking place have to be one after the other after the other. To take a break in between is really is not what the Torah is asking for. So again, according to the Radak, there's two ways you can look at it. You can look at it as they ate on Yom Kippur, or they didn't eat on Yom Kippur. The simple explanation is that they didn't, because how could they have done so? But the Radak again entertains that it's something which could have been uplifted, these laws, for the sake of the inauguration of the Beit HaMikdash. You have to think about why would that be allowed, but nonetheless, that's what the Radak states. So one could certainly, whichever way one feels more comfortable, the different interpretations is the way that it's understood. If we continue with the next line, skipping one more line in the Radak, which is underlined, it says, V'hikshu, you can ask the question. The Omrin say, V'shem asu b'yom ha-kippurim zeh shlom v'lochlu. It's possible, as we said, maybe they brought the offerings, but they didn't eat them, right? As we said, maybe they brought them and they ate them. Maybe they'll eat them the next day. But it says that they celebrated every single day. And how did Jews celebrate? We eat. We all know that answer. When it comes to any Jewish holiday, it's surrounded by lots and lots of food. And therefore, the fact that we have a simcha to say that, oh, we didn't eat, that's not a simcha. And therefore, it must be that they ate. And how do we know that they were sameach? So we're going to see that in the last pasuk in this parak. It says, v'zehu shomer kosel v'yelchu aleihem. They went back to their tents. Smechim v'tovei lev. They were happy, and their hearts were, they had good heart. They felt good and complete. So how can a person have this fulfillment within their hearts and be happy? So to make a nice person, a nice Jewish man or woman happy, you feed them. And therefore that's what, again, probably happened even on Yom Kippur. So we skip one more line. We're going to see, and then it says Samach Vav. For some reason in this print, you'll see the Samach Vav, which we're up to in the Radak, is really for the next pasuk. So that's where we're up to. So let's see that. Okay. So if we look now in Pasuk Samach Vav, the last Pasuk in this parak, going back to the top of page 100, B'yom HaShmini. So when it came, that after the days have come by, now we're up to Yom HaShmini, the eighth day. Shilaches, bless you. Shilaches Am, V'yavarachu Es HaMelech. So on this time, he sent the people off, V'yavarachu Es HaMelech, and they blessed the king. Of course, how much food and drink they had provided for him. Which is a quote from the Radak, but this is the Pasuk. They went back to their tents, and they felt very good. Why were they happy? Because all the goodness which Hashem has provided with David Abdo, to David their servant, and to Israel his people. Now it's interesting.
Why the eighth day? It was over on the
14th
day.
I think it means, V'yom means that after that seventh, that second group of seven, after all the celebration was over. That's presumably what it means. You're right. It would make, so it would be nicer if it said the fifth.
Maybe the eighth day was Erev Yom Kippur, and they went home to prepare for Yom Kippur. They didn't eat on that day.
Maybe the first set of seven ended.
And then Yom Kippur broke it up.
Then they went back.
That's what I think.
It could be that way. Just the problem with that reading, you have to kind of work on the wording a little bit, is the previous pasuk sounded like that there was already 14 days of celebration, and then the last sentence says, then they left. Unless you want to read it as V'yom HaShmini means between those two 7 days, that's when they went back. That's certainly another possibility. But one of the big challenges of this pasuk is who they were happy with. After all, you had this king. Shlomo was amazing. He built the Beit HaMikdash, and now they're giving, you know, barbecues for 14 days, all the most delicious delicacies of steak and food and whatnot for 2 full weeks. So it stands to reason that they were happy with God. But what does the Pasuk also say? They weren't happy with Shlomo. They were happy, the Tuv Lev, with David Avdo. To David. David. You know what? David has passed away. He's not even in the picture. His son, Shlomo is the new king. His son Shlomo is the one that just built the Beit HaMikdash. His son Shlomo is the one that gave you all this food. Yet the Pasuk says, L'David Avdo. Very, very unusual. So the Radak assists us a little bit in this matter. And if you look in the Radak, it says, what do you mean L'David Avdo? So he explains like this. L'David Avdo Shikayim Loma Sheticho. Because Shlomo, all he did was carry out that which was promised to his father. Ki hayotze mechalatzav yibane habayis, that he, David, was promised that from his own children, the Beit HaMikdash would ultimately, eventually in the future, be built. Ki sholom b'shakei b'yamav Yisrael, that there would be peace and tranquility in those days for the Jewish people. And therefore, people, when they said that they thanked what Hashem did with David Abdo, what that really means is that they are remembering what Hashem promised David many years back. That's what the sentence means, that they were happy that Hashem kept the promise with David Abdo to David, his servant. And the promise Hashem made was that we, in fact, what is occurring now is taking place, that David's son did all these things for us. But the focus is always on David. Because everyone is always remembering that promise that was in the days of David. And therefore the whole focus of the Beis HaMikdash is, when is that promise that Hashem made to David, when will that finally take place? And that's, as we mentioned numerous times, one of the reasons, as we'll see a second reason in a minute in Rashi and the Radak, why we say Mizmor Shir Chanukas Habayis with David. We talk about the building of the house of the Beit HaMikdash with David, that David built. Also on Sukkot, interestingly enough, on Sukkot is the time, at the end of benching, we have all these different sentences for Shabbos, for Shkodesh. On Sukkot we say, Al Sukkot David Hanufalas, regarding the Sukkah, the booth, which is referring to the Beit HaMikdash, that fell down. Of course, there must be a connection between the Beit HaMikdash that was built and inaugurated during what time? Sukkot. And reciting the sentence of the Beit HaMikdash falling down during the holiday of Sukkot is when we mention that. But again, what do we talk about? We don't talk about Shlomo. Shlomo's completely out of the picture. He's only a vehicle through his father.
It was the Vitz Levi. Everybody knew the big disappointment by not being allowed to do it.
Right. That's right. And one of the things that we spoke about, which is, again, a very important message, I believe, certainly when it comes to Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, which is coming, of course, we are a religion of action. But in the event that a person has the right intentions, and for whatever reason, you will do it, but for something that holds you back, you're not able to do it, Hashem gives you the credit as though you did it. And therefore, David would have built the Beis HaMikdash had he been given the permission to do so. And therefore, he gets the credit for it. And therefore it teaches us the profound message about how Hashem doesn't just give us reward for what we do, but for what we intend to do. To have the right mindset, to have the right feelings, the right intentions, Hashem gives us reward for that.
Good
too.
Intentions, but you have bad intentions. But
that, not for that, right.
It's
right.
Very interesting, right. Because we're reading Tehillim, and
yeah.
Tehillim, it seems like a good king is a dead king.
Is it right?
It's like an artist thing.
In his life, he says, they plotted against him, they didn't want him, they gave him so much. He went through so much, so many tears, so much sorrow. Now that he's dead, they're calling him
that happens a lot.
Sometimes you don't know what you got until it's gone, right? Sometimes when you have a new king, you realize, you know, the first guy wasn't as bad as I thought.
Like,
know?
The president. The old one looked at.
There's a you probably saw there's a billboard of Bush and it says, "Miss me yet?" or something.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Anyway, so let's conclude this Radak over here. Rabbi Seinu Zal Darshan, this is also, Rashi brings this down, a very unusual story, and all I can do is just translate the words. I don't necessarily understand exactly how this happened, but this is another interpretation as to why we acknowledge David as the one who was involved in the building of the Beit HaMikdash. So we look in the Radak, says as follows, the third or fourth, the last wide line. L'David Avdo. Why does it mention again David? Why does David get the credit? So here's, and probably may have heard this story. It's not brought down anywhere in the actual sentences, but this is where it's brought down. Ki b'shon shebike shlomo l'haknis aron l'fnai v'lifnin. We know, and that we saw this actually in the beginning of this parak, that the Aaron was brought into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, to the Holy of Holies, and Shlomo was involved in that process. And he specifically, who he chose to do so, that in itself was questionable. A person doesn't just walk into the Kodesh HaKadoshim, but the Aaron had to be brought into the Holy of Holies. And of course, the only way that that takes place...
Oh, it's on Yom Kippur. Oh, maybe that's the only time that the...
The Kohen Gadol
goes in there.
Right. Yeah. So right. So and we see also this whole process, the whole time is in that season.
That
right. Now, the way that the Kodesh HaKadoshim is, there's only one entrance. Right. It's there's not more than one ingress. There's only one way you can go in and out. So you have three walls, and the only way you can get into the Holy of Holies is through the Kodesh, is through the Holies. So you have to enter into the Kodesh, the Holies, which had in it the menorah, the shulchan, which had the showbreads, as well as the altar. One of the altars was in the Kodesh. And then you would enter into the inner chamber, the Kodesh Kodashim. And obviously, as we know, the Aaron was placed in this the holiest of places in the world, which had in it the Seres HaDibros, the Decalogue, etc. So, what happened? And all I can do is just translate the next words into the Radah. Dovku she'orim zebzeh. The gates were dovuk. They were attached or cling toward one another. And he was not able to open up those doors. Somehow there was a lock that he was not able to open to get into the Kodesh Kodashim. But it wasn't because the lock was rusty. It was some type of a hint or a sign that maybe Hashem wasn't satisfied at this point for the Beit HaMikdash to be complete. So the Omar, so what did he say? He sang what we always sing on Hakafa Zion, Simchas Torah, the very last song we always sing, Se'u Sha'arim Rasheichem, right? Which, please Hashem, open up, you're basically to open up your gates. That's the significance of it. And why do this is part of Tehillim. And of course, we sing Su Sharma Sheikhim when we're holding the Torahs, because we're basically saying the dancing of Simchas Torah is concluding. This is the last song. So open up your gates, open up the ark, so as to put the Torah in. And therefore, that's what Shlomo was doing at that time, saying or praying Su Sharma Sheikhim, to allow the Aaron to enter into the Holy of Holies. So that's the connection as to why that's the reason why we sing that song. It's not just a catchy tune. That's the significance of it. But then he wasn't answered. So could you imagine the embarrassment? Huge Beit HaMikdash, everything built, everything all set, and here he is, not able to bring the Aaron into the Kodesh Kodashim. So what is he going to do? What do you do when you yourself, based on your own merits, you're not going to be answered? So Kivan Shomer Al Tashev Pnei Mishichecha, please do not forsake the ways of your anointed one. Zachul Chaste David Avdecha, remember with your compassion your servant David. An interesting language, David Avdecha, which is exactly the language of our sentence, David Avdo. Right, it's the same words, David, your servant. So Shlomo turned to Hashem and said, okay, based on my merit, maybe the Beit HaMikdash shouldn't stand. Or I shouldn't think that it's all about me. I have to connect myself back to my tradition. I have to connect myself back to my past, to my father. And once that happened, miyad nena. Immediately he was answered. Again, it's a tremendous symbolism of not just the idea is that you could feel, yeah, that, you know, I'm the one that did this. My father, he couldn't do it. Look at me. I did it.
He needed to be knocked down.
He's talking about what he did in the gosh, right? He is
this. Right. That's, and there, this, right. But it's a tremendous message for ourselves as well, especially the younger, earlier generation with the technology and everything. They think, okay, we're smart, everything's great. The older generation, what do they know? The truth is that our religion is based on the soul. It's based on connecting ourselves back to the past and realizing that it's not just about me. It's connecting to all the other people around us and those people before us.
It seems that you need
to... Can we turn on the air conditioning?
That would be lovely.
Do you know how? I don't
There's
know.
A remote control on one of those shelves.
I keep
there are two separate ones.
Okay, I this whole speech, shouldn't it have been done by the Kohen Gadol?
I still don't understand that.
Nope.
It's Perik.
Yeah.
Anything that he says, shouldn't that have been said by the Kohen Gadol, not by the Kohen?
But why?
He is the one who's standing and
talks about him making the sacrifices.
Yes.
Right.
What about him? And the Kohen Gadol is not mentioned.
Well, it is during the time of the inauguration. Not yet has the Beis HaMikdash officially been operational. We find this also similarly when it came to the Mishkan. Not everyone is aware of this, but Moshe Rabbeinu himself acted as the Kohen Gadol for the first 7 days until finally he handed over the reins to the Kohen Gadol, as though to say that the inauguration is a separate part of the service. It's not even considered... You know, it's like a grand opening. So a grand opening is not like everything else.
But he is from the Shevet. And David is not from the Shevet.
What was that?
He's from Shevet Yehudah.
But Moshe was a lady.
Right.
The same
thing. Right, it's not necessarily apples and apples.
Right.
It's true. Regardless, he's the one that built it. It hasn't yet been operational. So until the final screw has been put into that machine, which is the Beit HaMikdash, all the rules may not necessarily apply to it. And therefore, once he had to wait till the arm was placed, was put in, and maybe he was the one that felt empowered and responsible to do it. Which maybe that's part of the mistake. Maybe that's kind of what you're saying, is that, and what Hashem is saying, why he closed those gates, is though to say, yeah.
Remember your place.
Right, remember your place. There are other people around you.
It's your choice. It's my choice.
Right, that's right. So miyanen, that could be part of the idea. V'yadu kol Yisrael shem. Fine, miyanen. And this is again an important message for Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. One of the things that we mention as part of our Rosh Hashanah davening, zichronos, to remember. What are we asking Hashem to remember? What do I need Hashem to remember? The answer is our avos. We want Hashem to remember all the actions of our forefathers and matriarchs. That's the reason why, interesting enough, in Rosh Hashanah, you would think maybe we should be reading about the Aseres Hadibros, the Jewish people accepting the Torah. No. We read about stories of the actions of our patriarchs and our matriarchs. And especially on the second day of Rosh Hashanah, about the sacrifices that they made, willing to be able to even give up their own child, or give up their own life, for the service of Hashem. And it comes to teach us that message, is that when I stand on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, based on who I am as an individual, we may not necessarily stand a chance. But we're fortunate enough to be connected to great people. And as a king looks favorably upon his friend, but also look favorably upon his friend's son and daughter, so too Hashem looks favorably upon our avos and imhos, our matriarchs and patriarchs, and therefore we say to Hashem, remember them, and we're his children, we're their children, and therefore hopefully you look favorably upon us. And therefore what it does, it humbles us, it's a humbling experience. The whole concept of Yom HaNoraim is a concept of who am I? Who am I really?
Standing where you're standing now, you are nothing.
Right.
It's a humbling, completely humbling, should be.
On one hand, it's a humbling experience, but it shouldn't be an experience which lowers you. It could also elevate us to know that we're part of something above and greater than ourselves.
That's where you're going. I mean, look where you come from and where you're going, but you are in the process of it.
Right.
You are not there yet.
Right.
That concept can give you more optimism and hope.
Right.
Because you wouldn't be so fearful about thinking about, you know, if you're not such a great person, but you try
Right.
Meaning that Hashem would help her because of my ancestors.
Right. I think that's the reason why it's so important, just as Shlomo learns this message here, to remember that it's not all about him, that he's not an individual, and why should you take everything upon yourself? So too on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur, we have that realization. We stand as a community, and we stand not just our generation, but connected to our past, and Hashem looks favorably upon that. That's how it is in general, when it comes not even on Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur. There is a major difference between davening by yourself and davening with a minyan with a tzibur. Because when you daven by yourself, Hashem hears your voice. Just like in a choir, when there's many voices, you don't hear necessarily the individual. You hear a collective voice, voices together, of one beautiful heart, one beautiful sound. And it's a stronger sound, and it's not the pointing to the individual. So in general, to daven with a minyan has that tremendous power, but Hashem no longer focuses on you and you. Who are you? The answer is, it's not about me. We're together. We're together as a group and together as a nation, connecting to our past.
Yeah. The beauty of David is that he always went back to where he was, where he came from, what he was and who he was. No matter how high he got, Hashem made sure that he remembers where he came from.
That's right. And this, again, is probably one of the, similarly, why this happened to Shlomo at this great occasion. Yet he had this tension, this embarrassment of seeing that he can't bring this into the Kodesh of Hashem. It's not all about you. Don't forget your past. Don't forget David. And therefore, not only was this message given over to Shlomo, he wasn't the only one that was there. Everyone saw this. And he said the prayer. Presumably, the fact that we know this was the sentence, it's something which was known, that he said the words David Avdecha. And that's the reason why, when the Jewish people went back to their tents, it says they were happy on that which Hashem did with David Avdo. They knew, not just Shlomo, everyone knew, that the Beit HaMikdash was built not just on our merit, but on the merit of previous generations. Let's conclude the words of the Radak. V'yadu kol Yisrael, Shemachal HaKadosh Baruch Hu David Al-Avon, Al-Oso-Avon, and this also shows something amazing. We're now focusing our attention on tshuva. V'zehu asher osa Hashem l'David Avdo. Why did this have to happen? It may not necessarily have been just a message for Shlomo, but it's a message for all of Klal Yisrael. That even though we can look at David, and David got a bad rap for some of the mistakes that he made in his personal life or in a communal, whatever it may be, and therefore a person could focus on that. And Hashem said, you know what? In order for the Beit HaMikdash to be built, I don't want anyone to think that it was because David was less of a man, he wasn't a spiritual person. But rather, I want to let people know that there's a concept of Tshuva, this concept of Mechila. And therefore, the Beit HaMikdash and the Aaron could only enter in the merit of David. David, who may have made mistakes in his life, Hashem forgave. And therefore, if Hashem was able to forgive David for those mistakes, and Mirth Hashem, Hashem should also be Michael, should forgive all the things that we have done as well. And Mirth Hashem, by doing that, we should all have a Shana Tova, a Matukah, very sweet, and Happy New Year.